Most salads start with this, slicing and dicing. But if you're not proficient with your knife skills, you might not realize that how you cut your ingredients makes a big difference.
There's a reason why we dice or julienne or cut vegetables or foods a certain way, and that is it makes sense on your palate.
That's Matt Chatfield, a local chef and instructor. He says the thing about salads is they don't have to be diet food or boring. I'm Brian Ellison. Today, a food show on KCUR Central Standard, and we're digging into some of the most exciting salads around our metro. To start, Matt Chatfield welcomed us at his in-law's house in Raymore for a demonstration of a salad that's one of his family's favorites.
Gado gado is it's G-A-D-O, G-A-D-O, and it's a staple, if you will, or kind of the quintessential Indonesian salad. And we have it at our family get-togethers. My wife is of Chinese descent from Indonesia, Solo Indonesia, and we're part of a network of families here in the Kansas City area of Indonesian and Indonesian American. And we get together a couple of times a year for picnics, anniversaries, the Indonesian celebration of independence. And we eat so good at these because everyone brings a home style dish. Well, gado gado is one of those dishes. And it's a salad that's composed of some crisp cabbage with eggs and potatoes. It's got a peanut dressing, which we wouldn't normally think, oh, I'm going to have a salad tonight and I'm going to have a peanut dressing. So they've got some really cool elements in it, and they all add up to this very nice, fresh, vibrant salad. So we've got some carrots that we've peeled, and we're going to cut them in half, and then we're just going to chop them on a bias or at an angle, about 1/16 of an inch. We've blanched off some petite green beans, and those are closer to 1.5 inches, 2 inches, but they're bite size. And we're doing a mixture of some green cabbage, and I have also got some red cabbage, so that we've got some really vibrant colors to go in the salad. You can also incorporate, we've got at the table some chopped romaine if someone didn't want just straight cabbage. You know, if you had some spring greens out of the garden, or if you're a big kale lover, the baby kale, no one's going to tell you can't have that in the salad. We've got some little baby red potatoes that we cooked off in a little bit of salt water just to season them a little bit. And we're just going to slice those up. You can serve this for dinner already composed. At our house, we have everything in bowls and we pass it around, and people put on the amounts and the ingredients that they like. Over on the table that we're setting, we've got some fresh fried shallots. Now, you could also get the fried shallots in a jar at the Asian market. Or you know what, if you had French's fried onions in the can in your cabinet, you know, no, who's going to tell you you're wrong? Some fresh bean sprouts. We've got some hard-boiled eggs that we've sliced and a little bit of the romaine salad. Now we're going to make the salad dressing. So we've got our vinegar and our mirin or our rice wine and a garlic clove, and the blender will chop it up for us. And then just a little drizzle of some honey for sweetness. This is cooking. We don't have to use exact measures. We're just having some fun. And then we're going to put a little bit of peanut butter in there. It's a little bit of a peasant salad. It doesn't have any, quote, fancy ingredients in it. As I talked to my wife and said, you know, I've looked on the internet and I've done a little bit of research on this, and I see it at all the family gatherings, you know, what's kind of the history? And she said, that's our salad. It's a simple, we love that salad. That is our salad.
That was local chef Matt Chatfield. His recipe for Indonesian gado-gado is on our website, kcur.org/centralstandard. That story reminds us that as we talk about salads, we're talking about a pretty diverse set of foods. It's stuff from the garden, yes, but it can be almost any food with a wide variety of flavors. And joining us to talk about flavor is Judith Fertig. She's a cookbook author and food writer and now a food novelist as well. Judith, welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be on this morning.
It's great to have you back. So food novelist is not something that I see on many business cards, but your first novel came out last year. For those who haven't read The Cake Therapist, can you tell us what that's about?
It's about a young woman who's a pastry chef, and she's an intuitive. And so instead of getting somebody's story, you know, I'm seeing that you're crossing an ocean, she gets sort of people's inner lives through flavor. So she, you know, will focus on a client and all of a sudden a flavor will come through, and that's a hyperlink to that person's inner story, their feelings, and what's got them hung up in life.
Where'd you get this idea?
I think flavor's transporting. And I remember as a kid, there was a special bakery we went to for birthday cakes, and they had this elusive flavor in the frosting. And it took me years later to figure out what that was, and it was just a slight hint of coconut. But it's the flavor to me of celebration and of fun family times. So I think, you know, flavor can speak to us in different ways, sort of like if you smell suntan lotion and it reminds you of when you were a kid at the pool and saw that cute boy who decided he was going to like you too. And, you know, it tells a whole story.
Just from that one little scent.
Yeah, just from that, you're off to the races.
Are there examples of flavors for you that are sort of linked to particular personalities that your protagonist in the story encounters? Like, if you get a bitter taste in your mouth, that may say it's a bitter person, but or what other flavors really speak to you?
Yeah, well, interestingly, there's a character, there's a postman who calls at the bakery, and he, you know, is very dutiful and he does his rounds every day, but he's very underappreciated. She gets the flavor of rhubarb for him because rhubarb is one of those flavors that, you know, it's a homely plant that comes up in the garden. People either like it or they don't like it, but it's not something most people say, oh, I just crave rhubarb. It's an underappreciated flavor. So that was one of the ones.
He was sort of an underappreciated person.
He was an underappreciated person. There's another character that she sees in kind of the story as it unfolds, and the prompting flavor is fake lime. You know, like if you get a bad lime candy or you get a bad lime drink, that it's that chemical lime. And it's for her, that's the flavor of manipulation. You know, somebody has tried a little too hard, and it's fake.
This sounds like a really fun book to contemplate and then to write.
Yeah, you have to think like what flavor would that be, and flavor does speak to me. I think you know, there are certain things that, for example, cinnamon. Cinnamon has chemical properties that lower the blood sugar, so it's naturally comforting. And I did acupuncture for a while, and so I was interested in Chinese medicine. So some of that is part of it, you know, what salt and bitter and sweet and sour, what that connotes in Chinese medicine.
Why do you think flavor speaks to you so much? You said it really intrigues you. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, I've been writing about food for a long time, and I've written about food and travel, food and nutrition, food and history, food and chefs, food in the Midwest, food in, you know, all different barbecue. But then when it comes right down to it, I wanted to know what is it about food besides nourishing us? What does that do to us? What's that mind-body connection? And it's flavor. It's flavor that turns on the light bulb in your head. Mm-hmm. And it's flavor that makes you feel good, flavor that gives you well-being.
Yeah. Are there flavors that you think really – you're from Kansas City. Are there flavors that you think really define Kansas City? And maybe it's the things we expect from barbecue or something, but maybe it's something more than that.
Well, it is. And I actually grew up in Cincinnati, and it was a kind of a German town. And There was a smoke flavor to a lot of things. And but they at that time, Cincinnatians didn't do barbecue. They thought they did barbecue, but they didn't do barbecue.
Not the way we know barbecue.
No,
yes.
No. Ribs in the oven, that's not barbecue. So when I moved here and I learned how to barbecue, I recognized smoke as that flavor that it's like that that tribal flavor, that flavor of the ancient hearth, I think that deepens a dish and adds so much. It's almost like you're adding instant history, kind of like an antique in a room.
That's a great image. Are there other flavors that come to mind as at least defining of your Kansas City experience?
I think That's a good one. I think anything from the garden. I think when I moved here, I gardened a lot more and grew some things that that are interesting. And any kind of like fresh greens from the garden. There are greens that that you can buy at the store, which are so much better than the bad old days of iceberg lettuce. But if you grow your own greens, like a mix of, mesclun is what they call it, or baby arugula, that freshness from the garden that is Midwest that also says Kansas City to me.
You're talking a lot about the connection between flavor and certain feelings that it has the power to evoke. But a piece of that is its ability to trigger memories. And I know that your new novel explores kind of the connection between flavor and memory, and that's a connection that is really based on science. I was pretty interested to hear about this. Tell us about that connection.
Yeah, there are the name of the novel is The Memory of Lemon. And I thought... it has several components for me. One is in my family, the women in my family love lemon desserts. And this goes back as far as my grandmother, my mother, myself, my daughter. All of us are like nutso about lemon.
Yeah.
And I think for us, it's that flavor memory that's passed down on the DNA. And I thought, I wonder if that's really true.
Yeah, that just doesn't seem possible.
It doesn't seem possible. So then I found a research study from Emory University, and they did it on mice, and it showed that memory can be passed down on DNA, at least if you're a mouse. So
how is that possible? That's just crazy to imagine.
Yeah. Well,
so does this mean that a child might like the same things or have the same emotions triggered by a certain flavor?
I think so. And it people wonder if it's nature versus nurture. But my mother and my grandmother loved liver. I hate liver. So I miss that
100%,
DNA.
Yeah.
No, I miss that DNA memory. But I think it's definitely possible. And I think it's the associations with flavor. In the novel, it's one of the ways in which the main character, Neely, tries to bring home her homeless father, who is still suffering from the effects of post-traumatic stress syndrome from his time in Vietnam. So I think the associations that you have with the flavor also add to your life.
The title, as you said, is The Memory of Lemons. Why did you choose lemon as the sort of the central flavor at the heart of the story? What is it about the lemon?
It's one of my favorite, probably my favorite flavor. And I think it's one of the four top flavors in restaurant desserts. And when people go out to eat and they think, well, what are we going to have for dessert? There are chocolate people that always want something chocolate. There are fruit people that always want something fruit, whether it's, apple pie or, berry cobbler. There are cream people that they want creme brulee, and then there are the lemon people. So, right. And I'm of that. So, and I think it's a clarifying flavor.
I guess I'm wondering, you write a lot. You've written blogs and books. You've put together cookbooks. How is your writing process for a novel, for you at least, different? They all involve creativity, but this must be a really new and different experience for you.
It is. What's great about it is that you can make all this stuff up. when you write a cookbook, you can't think, well, I think this will take 15 minutes in the oven. You know, you have to test it, and it has to be factual,
right?
You know,
because everyone else is going to go and try and make
yeah. But if you think I like this bakery to look this way, you just make it up, and that's what's fun. But it's a lot of work in a different way than putting a cookbook together. You have to have a lot of people read your manuscript. You know, you have to be open to change. You have to pay attention to your readers, what your readers want, and so it's the same process in a way, but a lot of work in a different way.
Yeah. So for the rest of today's show, we're actually talking about salads, mm-hmm. which can be so many things. Are there any flavors that you associate especially with salads or a salad that you remember?
I think some of the best salads I've had have been in France, because they just are so conscious of very, very fresh greens. You know, we get greens at the grocery store and we think, oh, those look pretty good. But, you know, they could be like a week old by the time we get them. But in France, if you're having, a meal at a small restaurant, they've, gone to the market in the morning and they have the very fresh picked greens, and they have so much flavor that you don't have to really do a whole lot to them. So it could be a very simple dressing.
Yeah, well, and I think that's one of the things that appeals to me, at least, about a salad, maybe because I'm such an amateur in the kitchen, but the simplicity of a salad, that not every salad is simple, but many are. It doesn't need to be fancy, and sometimes that's what's most appealing about it.
Yeah, one of my favorites in the summer is baby arugula that's just dressed with a little bit of olive oil, maybe just a little bit of lemon, and a shavings of Parmesan or, you know, pecorino.
Yeah.
And I think that's all you have to do, and it's just delicious.
I'm ready. Did you bring some of that in? Do you have a particular favorite salad? Is that the one you would whip up, or is there one that is your go-to, your showstopper salad?
Yeah, salad I think is very seasonal. So right now in the beginning of summer, that's what I want. But as you go forward in the summer, greens are not as good because it gets too hot for a really fresh green. So you have to go on to something else. And that's when I like a grilled vegetable salad.
Hmm.
You know, that you could do a platter, you can have like a basil vinaigrette, and you have the wonderful, colorful and flavorful salad from the grill. And then as you go into the fall, you want something that's comfort foody. And for me in the Midwest, it means, a salad with an iconic Midwestern salad dressing, like blue cheese or Mayfair dressing from St. Louis.
Oh, Mayfair dressing.
Yeah.
Yes. Does that bring up particular memories for you? We were talking about memory earlier and the way those flavors trigger something.
Yeah. When I was in college in Springfield, Ohio, I went to a small school. When my parents used to come up, they would take us out to a steakhouse nearby. And the steaks were good, but, and you've been eating college food that was kind of, eh. And so to have a great steak and then to have this really chunky blue cheese dressing, it was like a little piece of heaven.
Mm-hmm. Blue cheese dressing. And that's one of those strong flavors that a person is really going to, it's going to trigger something every time.
Right, right.
Is this your last, the novel comes out next week.
Yep.
Is this your next big thing? Are we going to see more and more food novels from Judith Ferdy?
I think so. I'm Karen Adler and I write barbecue books together, and we're writing another barbecue book. But I think, I'm going to continue on with the novels that have food as kind of the starting off point. I think once you're a cookbook author, I think it's what one of the great things is that you've learned how to write with all the senses. And I think readers appreciate that.
Well, I want to offer my thanks to Judith Fertig. She's a food writer and novelist. Her new novel, The Memory of Lemon, will come out next week. Judith, it's been great having you here.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian.
When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation about salads with our food critics. Where do you go for great salads in Kansas City? Whether it's a restaurant or your own kitchen, we want to hear about it. Call 816-235-2888, 235-2888, or tweet at KCURCST. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, KCUR's Central Standard. We'll be right back. It's Friday, and it's a food show on KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and joining me now are our food critics, the stalwart Charles Ferruzza with The Pitch. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Brian.
And the illustrious Jenny Vergara from Feast Magazine. Welcome.
Good morning.
And the food blogger and health and wellness expert, Lisa Murphy. Welcome to you, Lisa.
Good morning, Brian.
Glad you all are here. Remember, if you have a favorite salad to eat out in Kansas City or to make in your own kitchen, we want to hear about that. So you can call us at 816-235-2888 and let us know. Or you can tweet at KCURCST. So we were talking in our first segment, you all heard that, about flavors. And obviously salads can have almost any flavor. They're all different. But is there a defining flavor that really evokes the essence of saladness for you, Lisa?
For me, especially in the summertime, it's lemon.
Mm-hmm.
Citrus, the freshness, the acidity of lemon. And I think the danger to salads is that they don't have enough flavor.
Yeah, that they end up just being lettuce or something
right,
like
exactly.
That.
So a nice zesty, citrusy vinaigrette really perks up what could otherwise be a boring salad for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, how about for you, Charles? Is there a...
I immediately thought of salad dressings, you know, because, you know, salads could be kind of dull. And what you said about the lemony vinaigrette would be a great simple way, with herbs maybe, to brighten up or refresh a salad where... You know, I've gotten to the point in my life that I can't even look at a bottle of that gloppy, creamy, nasty salad dressing.
Well,
it may be.
Is that an American thing? I actually in researching for this show, I went and realized that there are 13 open bottles of salad dressing in my refrigerator. Some of which
check the expiration.
Well,
Yeah, Charles, the expiration date won't matter on that. I'm afraid.
See, there's a household controversy in my house on that subject. But yes, we have some of them expired. 13 dressing. Is that a very American thing? What's the deal with that, Jenny?
I think it's just part of the continuing sadness, I think, in our food system, and that we're looking for convenience. And so I think it's just simply a matter of convenience. But I would tell you it takes seconds to put your own salad dressing together, whether it's a creamy one or whether it's a vinaigrette. And I have probably, it's been maybe 7 years now, I have not bought one bottle of prepared salad dressing. I just make my own. It's so easy.
I'm impressed.
I'm impressed seriously.
As well. And what is that super easy salad dressing that anyone can make?
Well, you know, a vinaigrette is always probably the easiest. But you know, basically it's an acid, it's an oil, and then it's a flavoring. If you want to put fresh herbs or whatever, I mean, it could be lemon, it could be vinegar for your acid. It could be any type of oil you have on hand. There's so many wonderful, flavorful oils that you can use, and some of them with great health benefits too. And then just, you know, maybe a little red pepper, a little salt and pepper. Shake it up literally in just a, you know, like a regular jar with a lid. Just shake it up and it's ready to go.
It's deceptively easy. I'm
telling you, it's like three ingredients.
Do you have a favorite dressing taste, Charles?
Less is more in my book. And but I grew up in a family where then, like today, salad dressings were always the loss leader at the grocery store. Mm. You know, one day you'd go in and they'd be $1.50, and the next day they were on sale for 75 cents. So my mother would buy them perpetually that we never used or ate. But I do think, and I'll have Lisa and Jenny weigh in, I do think that there's some weirdly creative juices going on in terms of dressings.
Mm-hmm.
That I was... At the Newport Fonda in Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And this was maybe more of a marinade than a dressing, but it was seafood. It was scallops, by the way. And the dressing / marinade they had on it was a vinaigrette made with strawberry daiquiri. And I thought, you know, this is just not happening for me.
That's a little too creative.
Yeah, way too creative.
You know, I noticed when you all were talking about some of the favorite salads you would identify in restaurants, each of you included a Caesar salad in your list. And that seems like that's sort of the classic salad, almost the one that defines a place. If they make a good Caesar salad, they're a good place. Is that fair to say?
Well, it's a very, very popular salad. It's hardly ever made in any traditional fashion.
Well, can we just have a moment of silence for that? I mean, where is the tableside Caesar? Bring it back.
I miss it
so much.
The last restaurant that I really knew that did a good job with that was, of course, Jasper's. It was a signature there, but they don't do the tableside anymore. But they do have a great Caesar salad.
Where else has a great Caesar salad?
Well, as far as traditional Caesar salad, and I must say I'm a pescatarian, so I do eat seafood as well.
So the anchovies do not
throw me. In fact, I adore anchovies. The more white anchovy fillets on the top of the Caesar salad, the better for me. But I like pierrepoints. They make a real nice traditional Caesar salad. They don't toss it tableside, mm-hmm. but it's definitely got the sharp flavors of the anchovy and some nice croutons. Thank goodness mm-hmm. the croutons haven't gone away.
Yeah, I'm. It seems like a steakhouse is the kind of place that should have a really good Caesar salad.
I think most steakhouses do. And being a non-meat eater, I enjoy going to steakhouses because they generally do offer great vegetables as well as great salads, including a great Caesar. There are a lot of really fantastic vegan and vegetarian Caesar salads around town as well.
How do you feel about the Caesar salad, Jenny? What's your favorite Caesar salad?
Well, so mine is a little bit untraditional in that it's at Happy Gillison Columbus Park, but it's made with kale instead of the traditional romaine lettuce. And so this is, you know, for those kale heads out there, we know you're there. This one's really for you, but it does have the fillet of anchovies that are on top, which are just delicious. And it's got this kind of garlicky breadcrumb that it's kind of tossed in that really adheres to the kale that's been properly dressed, and it's just a really wonderful like twist on a Caesar.
Jenny, is it just kale or is it kale mixed with romaine?
Nope, kale.
Ugh.
Yeah. Okay, Charles cannot contain himself any longer.
Let me just say that years ago when I was starting out in the restaurant business, kale was a garnish to be thrown away at the end of a meal. You know, it was no one ever ate it. And in fact, I used to set up a salad bar at this one restaurant I worked at. And the happiest moment of the night for me was throwing away the kale. But I think kale has a bitter taste that I really can't get into. Worse than endive even. But I just want to remind people that, you know, if a Caesar salad dressing is creamy, it is not a Caesar salad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a creamy dressing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And if the croutons look like they came out of a box, throw it away. I mean, you know, those are nasty. They look like cat litter to me. Hard little pebbly croutons.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. The pre-made croutons are not hugely appealing. But I think, too, a lot of restaurants have walked away from using a raw egg, which obviously was the big kind of
draw,
questionable. Yes. But it is a draw because it adds a creaminess and a mouthfeel to it that, you know, you just can't get without. So,
Charles, did I discern a cringe when Lisa mentioned the anchovy slices on top of the Caesar
yes,
salad?
Yes, you know, a couple things. Yes, people love anchovies. I find them incredibly salty, and that saltiness kind of can dominate a salad. And also, you know, the original salad created by Cesare Cardini did not use anchovies. It used or anchovy paste, I might add. It just used the anchovy flavor that came from Worcestershire sauce. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is made from anchovies. It's also a little bit salty too, but you know, I don't think you need to add an absurdly amount of salt to any salad.
Well, that's true. But Charles, I thought you were more is better type of person, and I thought you might go along with that.
With what?
More is better. The saltiness of the anchovies, I think it's such a perfect pairing with the crispness of the romaine.
Well, I do like the texture
juice.
Thing, yes.
Yeah.
But
well, and we should discern, too. We're not, you know, canned anchovies really have gotten such a bad rep. We're talking about fresh,
absolutely
beautiful fillets, which has a totally different texture and taste to
and
it.
And a smokiness. You're
and
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to give you guys an opportunity to respond in defense of kale. I mean, Charles launched a full broadside attack on kale there just a minute ago. Lisa, I think this is your department.
I agree. Kale has definitely been overdone, so I will give Charles that. But I still love it, and there are some fantastic kale salads around town. I've not tried the kale Caesar at Happy Gillis that Jenny mentioned, but there is a vegan Caesar salad, at the relatively new Unbakery and Juicery that's made with kale and romaine. So it's a nice little mix. You've got the crisp freshness of the romaine and the chewiness and the heartiness of the kale. And the dressing on that is cashew-based, so it's definitely vegan. The kale salad at Westside Local is still one of my absolute favorites. It has kale, shredded Brussels sprouts, almonds, Parmesan cheese. It's got this amazing, rich maple tahini dressing on it. It comes with brown sugar honey bacon on the top, but they'll happily leave it off for you, Charles, the next time you go if you want to make your salad vegetarian. And
I'll try not to.
I've had that salad too, and it is delicious.
You know what? I've had it too, and it is delicious.
It's great.
I
mean, it's the sweetness that helps, I think.
And as for the bitterness of the kale, I think we have a caller who wants to address that question. Bob is calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Bob.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm doing well. You have a solution to Charles's bitterness with kale problem?
Well, I've been doing something which sounds very bizarre. When I pick the kale, the leaves off the kale, I massage them just like you would massage somebody's shoulders, usually with a touch of salt, a little bit of lemon on them, and just enough oil to cover my... You massage it for about 5 to 10 minutes.
not massage oil. We want to clarify for our listeners.
Not massage oil. Okay. No, I'm talking.
That's a different show.
Yeah. Avocado oil or olive oil or something like that, and then I chop it up a shallot with vinegar, mm-hmm. a little mustard, maybe, you know, if I feel like it, a little bit of sweet white miso and tahini thrown in. And if you think it's a little, it's still a little bitter to you, just a little bit of maple, teaspoon of maple mixed up, add, incorporate it all. And I usually dress it up the top with fresh fruit and toasted nuts on top, whatever I happen to have. Pecans are very nice.
I have to say, it sounds pretty delicious, Bob. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Is Bob crazy with his massaging of kale, Lisa?
No, not at all. In fact, when I make a kale salad at home, I always massage the kale.
But what happens?
You know, it actually softens. So I think part of the problem with raw kale is that it's so fibrous, and you're chewing and chewing and chewing forever. So if you massage it with some lemon juice and some olive oil and a little bit of salt, it really does. It breaks down the fibers, and it makes it so much easier to eat. It makes it so much more digestible. And I suppose that you can't get a massaged kale salad out of a restaurant because, can you imagine?
That costs extra.
Exactly.
But, you know, we should mention, too, that kale actually comes in many varieties. And the variety that Charles is particularly talking about is called curly kale. But there's also kale that comes in really straight, beautiful, and that's a much more tender kale. So there's many, many varieties of kale out there that you can find. So if curly isn't your thing and it reminds you of the salad bar, then definitely look at some other varieties of kale. They're much more tender.
Another sort of general conversation about salads in restaurants, especially, is the question of the salad bar. I was intrigued in our opening piece about the Indonesian salad, the gado-gado, that in the chef's family they pass around all the ingredients, and that everyone kind of makes their own salad to their taste. Well, I mean, in restaurants for years and years, that was the big thing. You got to make the salad you wanted. Maybe not as much anymore, right?
Oh, no. I think the salad bars, which really came into vogue in the 1970s, believe me, I worked in enough restaurants that had them, they fell out of favor when they became sort of like creme brulee, too common. Mm. And I think the nadir point was when Wendy's started having a salad bar. And truly one of the more frightening salad bars.
The McSalad salad bar would not have been any more successful.
I don't think so. Right. But, you know, the 1970s salad bar seems to be making, you know, a renaissance. Who knew? But if you want to know what a salad bar in the 1970s was like, Ruby Tuesday has one. It looks just like... You know, right down to the fake cold pewter plates,
right?
And you know, it's really what salad
bar. And the kale as garnish on the
right.
sides,
right? And then of course, you know, there's this, you know, relatively recent vintage chain restaurant called Sweet Tomatoes that I like going to. I'm saying this facetiously because I'm always the youngest person there, mm-hmm. By many decades, and which is really saying something. But it's a salad bar in the most unhealthy sense. Because you can have, like I do if I go there, like two tiny pieces of lettuce and like everything else is unhealthy, like dressings, cheese, croutons and more croutons. And it's not necessarily a healthy salad, but boy.
Yeah,
it's delicious.
Yeah, I think of all these things that I see on salad bars, like at those sorts of places, that I never would have on my salad any other place, like chickpeas.
Chickpeas are really good for you.
They're delicious. They're good for you, but I never buy chickpeas.
You know, and it's really great. Whole Foods has a fantastic salad bar, and it's very vegetarian
by
friendly.
By the pound, Lisa?
Yes, it's by the pound. Yeah, you make it and they weigh it.
You do see salad bars in grocery stores still.
You do. And in general, grocery store salad bars tend to have a lot of offerings like that, Brian. And maybe it's because they have that in stock and they can just open a can and put it out there. But the salad bar, particularly at Whole Foods, is especially vegetarian friendly because they do have a lot of plant-based protein options like chickpeas, tofu, nuts. You know, that's a danger for a vegetarian. Often a salad may be the only option and you're presented with a bowl of lettuce and you have to go home and eat a snack, right? So that's a drag.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah, that's actually a question. Is we think of salads as a side item or as an entree, but if it's an entree salad, we think of meat for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
What's a vegetarian entree salad look like?
A vegetarian entree salad has a nice mix of greens, maybe some vegetables. If it's a chopped type of salad, it might have some broccoli, beets. Beets are a little bit popular and maybe a little bit overdone in salads, but I still really like them. And then there'll be a vegetarian protein, such as some beans or legumes, nuts, eggs. Eggs wouldn't be vegan, but I love hard-boiled eggs in salads.
Can any of you think of what you would consider vegetarian entree salads that really stand out to you in town?
There are some great ones at Cafe Gratitude. They have a lot of beautiful salads. They also offer a lot of add-ins, which I really like. You can get an avocado half or a little side of kimchi. They do a lot of really nice options to make the salad a little bit more hearty, and you don't feel like you've just been presented with a plate of garnish.
Right. Charles takes a deep breath whenever I ask a vegetarian question.
Although I used to work at a vegetarian restaurant for years, but and you were required to be a vegetarian when you worked there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was desperate, baby. That's the restaurant that fired me for eating M&Ms on the job.
Well, why don't we take a break? The food critics here on KCUR's Central Standard will have more of the best salads in town and more of your calls as well. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. Don't leave just yet. I'm Brian Ellison in for Gina Kaufman. Stick around. It's Friday, it's the Food Critics, and let us get back to our conversation about salads with Lisa Murphy and Jenny Vergara and Charles Ferruza. They're all here. We hope you will be too by calling 816-235-2888. We're going to check in for your favorite salads around town at local restaurants, but we had a couple of calls to follow up on that Caesar salad conversation. We had Kevin from Fairway who says that his favorite Caesar salad is Lydia's, says he thinks it has all the flavor and not too much anchovy and a good mix of all the spices. We also had a call from Marna who takes issue with Charles's rendition of history, says that the original Caesar had anchovies in the salad. Her stepfather got the recipe directly from Caesar, so
she must know.
Well, we'll have a dispute that we'll have to settle later on. Also addressing that question of tableside salads, Sally called us and said that the Savoy Grill used to make a wonderful chef salad tableside, not a Caesar, but a chef salad. Anyone remember that?
I seem to remember a tableside Caesar salad from the Savoy, but it's been a while.
I don't remember any tableside salad, but
you know. Yeah, there you go. 816-235-2888 is the number to call with your recommendations. But Charles, do you have any particular favorite salads at restaurants in town you'd recommend?
Well, I kind of stumbled recently on the Ménage à Trois salad, which, by the way, has no meat in it, Lisa. Mm. At Café Provence in Prairie Village, it's a celery root remoulade with capers, parsley, broccolini, I like that word, parsley, a hard-boiled egg. Would hard-boiled egg be vegan?
Vegetarian.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And a shallot vinaigrette, and it's a very sexy salad.
That sounds delicious and quite naughty.
Yeah, very naughty.
The Ménage à Trois, right? Is it? What do you like about it, Charles?
Because it's not. It's an untraditional salad, and not very heavy. Very light, and you won't feel guilty, you know, having that salad with a nice heavy entree or maybe a nice heavy dessert.
Mm. How about you, Jenny? Is there a particular salad that stays with you?
Yeah, you know, I like Kultstrom Club, the new Scandinavian restaurant that's on Broadway. They have a host, it's a mostly seafood and vegetarian friendly menu, and they have a host of salads on there. And one of my very favorites that I just discovered is their figgy green bean salad. It's got Danish blue cheese, which isn't too strong. It's got some nuts on there, obviously wonderful string beans, green beans on there. A little bit of lettuce kind of chopped in, dressed beautifully with this kind of sweet fig-based dressing. It's absolutely delicious. Very, very hearty.
Yeah, it's the Croxton Club. That's near the Uptown Theater, right?
That's correct.
On Broadway?
That's right.
How about you, Lisa?
I'm loving the cucumber peanut salad at Michael Smith's Extra Virgin. They do a wonderful job with salads because their menu's seasonal, so it changes with the seasons and the ingredients are always fresh. And the cucumber peanut salad has diced cucumbers, peanuts, of course, Israeli couscous, which is the big couscous, and a cumin vinaigrette. I think there's some parsley. The salad's made to order, so they'll also leave the couscous out for you if you're gluten-free. It's wonderful on their patio with a nice glass of rosé.
I would never put cucumbers and peanuts together. That's riveting.
You'll have to try it. It's amazing. Yeah, it's just fresh, light.
I think of couscous as almost a salad, a side to the side that is the salad.
You know, the small couscous is perhaps, Brian, what you're thinking of, mm-hmm. but the Israeli couscous is big. It's almost as big as a pea, not quite. Huh. And it's just plump and a little juicy. There's something really unique about the texture.
It's got a bit of a chew to it, kind of like the tapioca balls that are in like the mochi tea and all that, mm-hmm. bubble tea.
Middle Eastern meals often have a whole variety of salads served as sides, things like tabbouleh, right?
They do. Middle Eastern food is so vegetarian friendly. Tabbouleh, fattoush, mutabul, just fresh, wonderful ingredients. And tabbouleh is traditionally made with almost all parsley, very little bulgur, which is the grain in tabbouleh. But yeah, you're right. Very vegetarian friendly.
Yeah, 816-235-2888 is the number to call. Christopher is joining us from Waldo. Good morning, Christopher.
Hello there.
What's your favorite salad in town?
My favorite salad is at Cucina della Ragazza in Westport. It's their roasted beet salad. It's a really great arugula-based salad with roasted beets, blue cheese, and walnuts. And you can also get chicken or a really tasty light Italian tuna salad on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about it is that it's just fresh. It's very lightly dressed, so it's really crisp. And it's something I have for lunch several days a week.
That sounds delicious, Christopher. I appreciate your calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Good to talk to you. So what other salads stand out to you, Jenny? I know that some of the salads that you enjoy are these bigger entree salads, right?
Right. So I've got one on my list. You know, I kind of went by traditional salads, and the Cobb salad is certainly one that we should give a shout out to because it's literally a meal in a bowl. I mean, there's so many protein elements to it. There's a little bit of a different take on it at the Bristol Seafood Grill, which is in Leawood, obviously, and also in the Power and Light District. They have a lobster Cobb salad, and if you've ever had their lobster rolls, it's basically the filling of the lobster roll that's kind of tossed then with bites of watercress and arugula that give it this peppery bite. There's baby spinach, tomato, applewood smoked bacon, white cheddar, avocado, corn, red onions, sweet potato dressing. It's really like eating a lobster roll without the bun, if you're gluten-free, there you go.
Sounds delicious.
But it really eats like a meal, and it's so cool and refreshing, those seafood salads during the summer, I think.
How about you, Lisa? Obviously, none of yours have meat on them, but...
Correct. Eden Alley, which is a perennial vegetarian restaurant, they have a lot of really great hearty salads. You can make your own there, but I'm partial to the garnets and greens, which has been on their menu forever. It's got mixed lettuces, beets again, walnuts. It's delicious. It's got, a poppy seed vinaigrette. You can add lots of things to it if you like.
Yeah. Charles, is there a particular meaty salad that really stands out to you?
Absolutely. I like the slice steak salad at the Brio restaurant, the Country Club Plaza. I mean, it's a very I'm not one who usually orders a salad as a main dish unless I'm completely goaded into it. But this was a good one. You know, it's got a really nice pieces of it's heavy on the grilled tenderloin, which I liked. And it has creamy horseradish, a lot of interesting variations of taste. Creamy horseradish, spicy pecans, gorgonzola, and tomatoes all on top of a tricolor lettuces. It's nice. It's a nice,
sounds
heavy
pretty.
Salad. Yeah,
sounds
very
really
pretty.
Great. You mentioned gorgonzola. That's one of those toppings that pretty much any time it's added to a salad, I'm going to enjoy that salad. You guys have toppings like that?
Oh, I love gorgonzola.
Yeah.
Yeah. Toasted nuts, I think, are wonderful. Pine nuts, which you often will see on salads, they often go with an arugula salad, a really simple, summery, I would consider it more of a side salad would be arugula tossed with lemon juice, a great quality extra virgin olive oil, maybe a little sliver of Parmesan cheese and some toasted pine nuts.
I would rather have nuts, I think, than croutons in or on my salad.
Sure, yeah.
Wow, you don't like leftover bread?
I just, you know, I like the crunch of the nut. And each nut kind of has its own flavor profile. And I find croutons so snoozy.
I wanted to ask our panel here, what is your feeling about when you are ordering a salad, asking your server if he or she would ask the kitchen to leave a specific ingredient off the salad?
I am anti that.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think you should be able to get it the way you want it?
No, I don't.
Why is that?
Well, especially in a chef-driven restaurant, because, you know, there is talent in the kitchen that has been thoughtful. And this is the stump speech I give at Test Kitchen every single dinner about putting yourself in the hands of the chef. I mean, this man's been trained. He knows what's in season. He knows what goes. And there's a perfect place to eat the salad you want, and that is at your house.
And I have total sympathy for Jenny's position on this. But as a vegetarian, if I were to do that, I would be limited to only the handful of few vegetarian restaurants that we do have in Kansas City. So I do ask for special favors. I do it really nicely, and I kind of, you know, say, oh, would you please? And I find people are so friendly.
It's much more common. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is much more common.
The reason
sure.
I ask this, Jenny, is because this Cobb salad you talked about at the Bristol Seafood Grill sounds delicious to me, but there is one ingredient I'm allergic to.
Oh.
And, you know, and it's not... It's not a major ingredient, probably, I'm guessing, but I would like to have that salad without that component.
I think a food allergy might be an exception.
Well, certainly restaurants are willing to accommodate any food allergy, obviously. But in this case, you know, you have to be thoughtful about, I think that the lobster salad is pre-made, you know, because it goes in the lobster rolls, it goes on the salad. So it might not be an option to have whatever your ingredient is taken out.
But. How about the dressing on the side? Not so much changing the recipe, but controlling the amount.
You know, I try not to ask for it on the side.
Really? It's such a standard now.
You don't get angry stares when you do now, but I'll ask for it lightly dressed if I'm aware mm-hmm. that it's a place that tends to overdress. I find that places don't overdress the salads much anymore.
Hmm. A more health conscious age.
Either that or I've just gone to liking more dressing on my salad. I'm not sure.
Could be that too. Let's talk to Rebecca in Shawnee. Rebecca, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi.
I was calling about a restaurant in Leawood. It's called Enjoy, and it just opened a couple months ago. And I'm a salad freak. I love salads, but I always love to get a salad that just really feels like a meal and is surprisingly good. And they have one there called Ocean Breeze, and it's fantastic. It has capers, but it's not the little capers that are like in a jar. It's, you know, real fresh capers and like a lemon olive oil dressing, and there's tuna and white beans and spinach, I think arugula, something like that. It's just good. And I think Michael Smith was maybe involved in opening the restaurant somehow. He's listed on the website too, but it's just really, really good.
Rebecca, I'm looking at our food critics who don't seem to know about the restaurant. So
where is it?
It's near, what's the other Blue Stem restaurant? Rye?
Right.
In Mission Farms, I think it's called, over in Leawood. Off of Mission and 435-ish,
yeah,
kind of over there.
You can't get off 435 there. But, yeah, there's a Rye and there's several others.
Is there a tavern?
Spin, I think.
Is there a tavern at Mission Woods,
too? At Mission Woods. Mm-hmm. Mission Farms. Yeah,
yeah.
That's right. Rebecca, thanks so much for bringing that to our attention. I bet they'll be picking up a customer or two from our food critics at some point here. Thanks so much.
Great. You're welcome.
Any other salads? I know that we haven't talked about the infamous to some people seaweed salad, but are you a fan, Lisa?
I am a fan of seaweed salad, and I must admit that I'm a little bit disappointed and surprised to learn that most, if not all, seaweed salads are not made in-house by the sushi restaurant or the sushi bar. They purchase them pre-made. And I'm a little bit concerned. It's sort of one of those things where I just don't want to know what's in them. And then I tell myself that the health benefits of eating the seaweed are going to outweigh anything else that might be in there that I don't really want to eat. But I think they're delicious. They're so fresh and so light, and just the tanginess of the seaweed.
I'm assuming that they must, like fresh seafood, they must bring it in from a coastal city.
I don't know. I hope so, Charles. I hope so.
Is there farm-grown seaweed? I am not sure.
I don't want Missouri Lenexa. Seaweed.
Hey, I want to thank our food critics, Lisa Murphy, the food blogger and health and wellness expert. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
Charles Ferruza, as always, with The Pitch. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
And the illustrious Jenny Vergara from Feast Magazine. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you all here. For a list of all the restaurants and salads mentioned today, you can visit kcur.org/centralstandard this afternoon. You can also find all our past shows there. Twitter's a great way to keep in touch with the show. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTS Brian. On Mondays at 10 a.m. this summer, KCUR is giving you a chance to weigh in on some possible future programs, so join us on Monday for The Pulse. We'll be back on Tuesday to talk about schools getting and how they get funded in Kansas and what might be going on right now in Topeka to make that happen. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays by Jen Chen. We get help from Suzanne Hogan and Andrea Tudhope, and from intern Anna Sterla. Our announcer is Linda Scher, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. Gina Kaufman's on leave. I'm Brian Ellison. Have a great weekend, everybody.